grateful, recovering, and happy Al-Anon member this morning. I am from Huntington, West Virginia, and my name is Alice. This morning I would like, since we are Al-Anons at the table, to read our preamble. The Al-Anon family groups are a fellowship of relatives and friends of alcoholics who share their experience, strength, and hope in order to solve their common problems. We believe alcoholism is a family illness and that changed attitudes can aid recovery. The Al-Anon is not allied with any sect, denomination, political entity, organization, or institution, does not engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any cause. There are no dues for membership. Al-Anon is self-supporting through its own voluntary contributions. Al-Anon has but one purpose, to help families of alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps, by welcoming and giving comfort to families of alcoholics, and by giving understanding and encouragement to the alcoholic. Will you please join me in opening this section of the meeting with the Serenity Prayer, please? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. I'll read the anonymity statement. The principle of personal anonymity at the public level is just as important for the relatives and friends of an alcoholic as it is for an AA member. At the level of press, radio, and TV, all Al-Anons are anonymous. It is the member's choice how anonymous he or she wishes to be with friends, associates, and others. However, there is a much broader meaning in the traditions. They stress principles above personalities to assure us that no one will use Al-Anon for profit, prestige, or power. We don't have any announcements this morning. Isn't that great? In order to not take any more of our time, we're all here for the purpose of hearing Lois this morning, and I have asked our past delegate from West Virginia, Esther S. from Clarksburg, to introduce our honored guest.
Hi, my name is Esther. I am from the Central West Virginia Al-Anon Group in Clarksburg, West Virginia. In October 1969, my husband and I had the occasion to attend Bill Wilson's last anniversary dinner. And during that weekend, we were in the coffee shop of the hotel, and Lois walked in, and I told my husband, I said, "There's Lois." He said, "Are you sure?" I said, "Yes, that's Lois." And he went over to her, and he said, "Didn't I see you in Toronto in 65? And with that twinkle in her eye that only Lois can get, she said, "Oh, probably did." And he said, "Go over there and straighten my wife out." And she said, "I don't suppose there's anything wrong with you." And he came back to the table with the most subdued look on his face that I've ever seen. Now, I think that was the first time anyone had ever said that to him, but I guarantee you it hasn't been the last. And I fell in love with this lady. I was new in the Al-Anon program, and I thought, this is my kind of people. So this morning it is with very deep gratitude to the Al-Anon Fellowship for the change it has created in my life that I want to welcome Lois to West Virginia and the 38th Southeastern Conference and introduce you to Lois W.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
It is certainly great to be here with you all. And I can't tell you how much I thank you for carrying on this beautiful program that we have, that God and AA and so many other people too in AA have given to Al-Anon. I think that gratitude is one of the symbols, I think, almost, of our fellowship. I hope it is, because we have so very, very much to be grateful for. And I particularly have more than anybody, I think, in this whole world. That's my cane, never mind. To be thankful for. I had a wonderful husband, and I have the love of so many people. And I want to talk a little bit about that and about carrying the message on. You know, it's important a thing can't get started unless somebody takes the first step. Somebody makes a move. But the carrying on afterwards is really what makes a fellowship. If Bill had started the idea of Alcoholics Anonymous, and even if Dr. Bob had come in with him, if nobody carried it on, what would AA be like? Nothing. And so it's the people that carry on through generation after generation, and I really feel sure that it will be carried on generation after generation. Bill was very, very optimistic about our three A's, AA, Al-Anon, and Al-Anon, about the potential that they had in this world. And I think I'm even more optimistic. I really think that we can play a very large part in saving this troubled world from itself. So, as I say, I'm so grateful for your love and everything, and devotion. But I think the emphasis should always be on the new people coming in, the people that are to carry it on. I think I'd like to tell you a little bit about how AA started, and because AA was the embryo of Al-Anon. Bill, as a young man, when we were first engaged, he never touched a drop of liquor. And I was so very proud of him. I thought, what willpower, what strength of character he has. Never to touch a drop of liquor. So, I was very, very surprised when, after we were married, to go to New Bedford, Massachusetts, where he was stationed in the Army during the First World War, and to go to a party and look around when it came time to go home for Bill. No Bill. I couldn't find him. And I asked some of the boys about it, and he said, oh, we had to take Bill home some time ago. So I was quite surprised and disgusted and shocked, of course, when I got home and found him with a big bucket at his head. But I wasn't too worried in those early days, because I thought that living with me would be such an inspiration that he wouldn't need the artificial stimulant of alcohol. But years went on and on, and Bill's drinking got worse. Bill never drank socially. He always drank to the limit when he drank at all. There were many times that he didn't drink at all. But when he did, he was laid out completely. at the end of it. And he thought at first, of course, that he could stop drinking any time he wanted. And I tried to make him want to stop drinking. And sometimes he thought he wanted. Sometimes he wanted it. He wanted to please me. He wanted to make me happy. But he actually did not want to stop drinking. But then came a day when he did want to stop with all his heart and mind and soul. And he couldn't. He used to write in the Bible, which was the most sacred place he could think of, "I promise you, my dear wife, this day, never to take another drop of drink from now on." And that would last maybe a week, maybe a few hours. And he would be drunk again. Excuse me. And Bill really meant it this time, but I knew he did, and he couldn't. And so finally he lost all hope. And I don't think there is a sadder sight in this world than somebody with such great ability and love in his heart could fall so low and give up all hope. But that happened to Bill, and I had to make all the decisions. I had to be in contact with the outside world, the only contact with the outside world. I had to earn the living. I had to do everything. Bill was nothing but a sodden rag. So, that was a very heartbreaking situation. Somehow or other, however, I never did quite lose hope. There was always a little gleam somewhere, or would return after desperate hours, would return. I couldn't believe that such a thing could happen. So, finally, a miracle did happen. And it really takes a miracle for somebody as sick as Bill was, to be made whole again. And when I went to see him after this wonderful miracle had happened, which I'm sure you've all read about in the big book, I knew that something tremendous had happened, that he was free at last. And I never had another doubt from that moment on. And he never had another doubt. And as it proved, he lived in many, many happy years after that. And you know about his friend coming to him and telling him about how he found sobriety in the Oxford Group. The Oxford Group was an evangelical movement which lasted many years, and it was a worldwide movement. And it believed by changing individuals you could change the world, and they were out to change the world. And it really did a lot of good. And many of our principles and precepts in AA and Aldon are taken from the Oxford Group. And one day Bill said to me, "Let's hurry up and go to a meeting." Well, I had a shoe in my hand, and I took that shoe and I threw it at him as hard as I could, and I said, "Damn your old meetings." This surprised and shocked me lots more than it did him. Why had I reacted so violently to a simple remark of his? Here he was sober. I thought I was the happiest person in the world. I have a great ability to rationalize. Bill was not drinking. That had been my lifelong purpose, to help him stop drinking. And here he was now, free of liquor. If I wasn't happy, if I wasn't the happiest person in the world, why wasn't I? What was it? There must be something in me. It took me a long time to get down to that fundamental. But I finally did. And then to ask myself, honestly, one of Bill's precepts of the early AA and all AA, of course, was to take an inventory. I had never thought to take an inventory. I had accepted myself, taken myself for granted, that because I was well brought up in a moral, loving, very loving home, that my ideals were the highest, and that there couldn't be any improvement on them. And that my methods and ways were the right ones, the very best ones. I had thought that maybe there was something that I did was not right that made him drink, but I couldn't figure it out, and I decided that couldn't be so. But really, it took me years to work it out that I too needed to change my balance of qualities and to reassess my whole life. So in those early days, after Bill and Bob had started this wonderful fellowship, and there were members in a few cities around, people had to go to a place if they wanted to start a new group. There was no literature. There was no way of spreading the message unless you went. You had to travel. So Bill and I did a lot of traveling in the old days, in the early days of AA. And we'd go to this place and that place, and Bill would talk to the men, mostly men, because there were very few women alcoholics that came out of the bedroom, we'll say, in those days. And there were mostly men, and I'd talk to the women. And at first these gatherings that I had were kind of just social meetings. We might gossip about our husbands, or we might play bridge even. While Bill and the boys were having a meeting. But as I became clearer and clearer in my own mind about my own needs, I began to tell the groups of families about it. And Addie Smith, who was also, she and Bob were in the Oxford group, she would tell the families about how she knew that she had to live by these same principles. And Addie Smith, we don't hear very much about her, but she was a marvelous person. And both AAs and non-alcoholics used to go to her and tell them all their troubles. And she was nearly blind. She couldn't see very well. She'd sit in a dark corner of the room and smoke cigarettes. She was a chain smoker. One cigarette after another. But she was a very, very loving and wise human being. And as I say, AAs, as well as their families, used to come to her for advice. And she would, of course, tell them about her own discovery that she had to live by the principles of AA. So then, later on, as AA grew, and of course there was literature published, and the General Service Office was set up, and and Bill would work on the structure, a future structure, or the present structure that would be suitable for the future of this fellowship. And he spent much time and thought in reading how other societies were organized and formed, and the principles under which they were being held together. And he tried to analyze it. He studied governments, he studied churches, he studied all kinds of different things, so he could excuse me, so he could get some idea of what would be best for this very unique society. It couldn't exist and grow with the ordinary organization of a society. It had to be something that fitted into the unusual temperament and situation of the alcoholic. So he spent a lot of time thinking about it and worked out this, which seems now as if it had been a very God-inspired process, this structure that we have in AA, where there's no one body of people or one person that has any authority over anybody else. The only authority is God, as we understand him. So while he was doing this, he had come to the conclusion that AA needed a yearly conference, an annual conference of delegates from all over the country to come together and to oversee what was being done at the General Service Office. And it would be the delegates, thank you, the delegates' privilege to decide whether they thought that the what had been done by the General Service Office and Board of Trustees was in the best interest of AA. So he went around the country, traveled around to get the opinion, to tell the groups about this idea and to get their opinion on whether they wanted to do it. And when he came back, he told them Oh, when he came back, he told me that he had found, surprisingly to him, and also to me, a number of groups of the families of alcoholics. He hadn't realized that they had, that the families had gotten together. Sometimes they got together, as I said before, just to gossip. Sometimes they got together to put on the refreshments at a meeting. Sometimes, if there was an AA clubhouse, they would hang up curtains in the AA clubhouse. But some of them had a fundamental purpose of helping themselves to live by the 12 steps of AA, as they had been adjusted to their own situation. So, I was surprised to hear that I knew that a lot of families of alcoholics were living that way, but I hadn't realized that they had formed these groups all over the country. So he asked me if I would start a similar fellowship. Excuse me. If I would start a similar fellowship to AA for the families of alcoholics. So Al-Anon is really an AA's idea. And a darn good and important idea. So, when he asked me if I'd sought such a fellowship, I didn't want to. Our first years in AA had been very, very, very busy. We'd had a wonderful time. I mean, we'd felt needed and useful. But we hadn't had a real home of our own. There were 2 years where we went around, I think it was 51 different places we stayed in these 2 years, living with other AAs because we didn't have any home of our own, we didn't have any money. I'd stopped. Bill had been saying for a long time, I want to get Lois out of that damn department store. And finally he did. But so there wasn't any real income. So we had gotten a home in 1941. And it was such a joy to me. It was a home in the country, not too far from New York, about 40 miles from the city. And I was having such a glorious time in the garden. I just loved flowers and getting my hand in the soil and weeding. That I didn't want to take the time away from this home that we had. But it wasn't very long before I figured out that and really felt very deeply that this was something very much more useful and important, and I wanted to do it. So I called a friend, a neighbor, a girl by the name of Ann Bigham, who, by the way, had been going, or who had formed a group of families in her area. She lived about 8 miles from us. In her area, a group of the families. And she was thrilled to do it. And she came up to my house at Stepping Stones to help me one day a week. And we wrote to a AA and asked them if they had any names of the families of alcoholics. If they had, would they send them to us, please? And to our surprise, they gave us 87 names. And we wrote to those 87. And we asked them if they would like to form a fellowship of the families of alcoholics, similar to AA. And there were 50 of them. And we got back answers from 50 saying they would love to do it. So Al-Anon really started with a nucleus of 50 groups all over the country, which is really, I think, a surprising number of groups to start with. And then it began to grow. And we sent out questionnaires continuously, asking this fellowship if they wanted to, well, form a fellowship like AA, if they wanted the name to be Al-Anon Family Groups. And the principals said, I'm sorry, the same as AA. And they said they would. So we got to be so busy that we had to move to New York. And we went around, we found some groups in the neighborhood down on Long Island and Jackson Heights and several different places around, up in Connecticut. And we asked for volunteers down in New York. And the AAs up there in our neighborhood have always been very good, kind and thoughtful. And they had an AA clubhouse on West 24th Street. And they offered us the upstairs room, the use of it for our meetings. So we started it with about five Al-Anons down there. This was in 51. Al-Anon opened, well, it was 51 that Ann came up to my house too. But this was just the end of the year. And we started there. And we had all kinds of interesting experiences, of course. And the place was freezing cold in winter and hotter than Hades in the summer. So it was either Lois's sweatshop or Lois's icebox, they call the room upstairs. But we had some very marvelous gals who helped us, and so many of them have gone, but some of them are still around, of course. And that's really the way Al-Anon got started. And it continued to grow and grow and grow. Of course, it had AA ahead of it, so it grew very fast. Also, the potential for growth in Al-Anon is, I don't know, about 50 times, I would say, greater than in AA, because the number of people associated with an alcoholic are so great. The families, the grandparents and the children and the cousins and the employees and the teachers and all kinds of different people that are associated with alcoholics can join in Al-Anon. So with this really terrific chance that Al Anon has, I don't think there are any limits to which we can go. And as I said earlier, I really believe that our three A's have a chance to change for the better this troubled world. I thank you.
Lois, thank you, thank you, thank you. We all thank you for your constant love and dedication to the Al-Anon Fellowship for the past 31 years. I think your message of hope shines for the millions of us all over the world whose lives have been affected by the disease of alcoholism in a loved one. I hope that your visit with us today and your inspiring words will let us all feel the responsibility of carrying that light to the millions still out there in darkness and despair. Thank you again.
Thank you very much.
Because we love you so much in West Virginia, West Virginia Al-Anons wanted to give you a love gift. We finally came up with something that we feel that maybe will help you to remember us as we remember you daily. And I would like at this time for Mary Jo to come and present this gift. I always feel that the artist ought to get to present the masterpiece, so I'll call on Mary Jo.
Oh my, friend.
I am Mary Jo from St. Albans, made with love. As I made it, and it represents all of the Al-Anons from West Virginia. I love you.
Oh, thank you so very much. Look what you've got to carry. I'm gonna read you the card. There's a big, great big card, and the parcel itself is huge. And the card goes on. See the card. For this special occasion, we decided that all of us should pitch in and buy you this gift. Your share comes to $1.50.
We do things differently in West Virginia, Lois.
All of our love, all the Al-Anons from West Virginia. Best wishes. So all the animals are singing. And there's a hoary looking person. Animal. A lion. Yes.
We roar a lot.
Yes, that accepts a parcel.
May I ask Barry to help you with this?
You don't open it.
I love that. You say it comes to $1.50.
I'm sorry, I neglected to introduce the gentleman on Lois's right. He is Barry L. from New York, and he travels with Lois and helps her on and off planes and does all those nice things like pushing her wheelchair and protects her.
Tell me who made it.
Beg your pardon?
Who made it?
Mary Jo.
Oh, you made it. Oh, thank you, Mary Jo.
Is that pretty?
It's beautiful.
That's beautiful. I'll never be cold after this. It's marvelous. Thank you so very much, Mary Jo, and all the rest of you, for your share of it, I'm sure.
You got to pay your $1.50, yeah.
What if I were me?
I'll have to give her change. She's a big spender. We're not quite through yet. We still have one more small gift that I'm going to ask Janet from St. Albans to come and present to you.
Trash here, isn't it?
I'm Janet, Grateful Al from Hour 9 from Winfield. And I just want to give this God bless. Oops! I better have done correction myself. God bless you, and thank you for changing your mind.
Oh, thank you. I'm overcome. This is so pretty. I hate to spoil it. But he waits with bated breath.
Reminds me of a wedding shower.
I can't get over a second present. Oh, this is. Oh. It says, "Damn your old meeting."
On the shoe.
Want me to hold it, Lori? Yes.
There's a picture of a shoe in the flying through the air. Isn't that cute?
It says, "Damn your old meetings." June 1982, and it has a little old-fashioned shoe.
Very cute. You can put this in the midst
of it. We took the afternoon. We took the afternoon.
Before we close our meeting, I think all of us have mighty full hearts this morning. And there just aren't words enough for me in my vocabulary, nor am I articulate enough to express what's really down in here. Will you all stand and join me in closing our meeting with the Lord's Prayer? Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever. Amen. Yes. Well,